Welcome to Flip the Culture with a filthy. Ah, damn, boy. Twiggin'.
Yeah.
All right, bet. We good now. Welcome to Flip the Culture with a flip.
Culture don't change until we.
Welcome to Flip the Culture, where the culture don't change until we do. I did that about three times, man. It's your boy, E-Josiah Kenty, here with a special guest, Jacoby Williams, man. I'm so glad to have you here, bro.
I'm glad to be here, bro. Honor, bro. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, man. So I appreciate you coming on this podcast, man, because the thing that that gets me the most is seeing people go through life and they don't know how to flip their situation, bro. Mm-hmm. That's what Flip the Culture came from, bro. It's literally my testimony of how I was able to have four ligaments torn inside my knee. And it's just like, bro, how do you navigate through life now, right? So I know you have a phenomenal story, bro. We're going to unpack that thing today, man, because mm-hmm. I know it's going to be jam-packed. But the basis of it is I have this TED Talk coming up, mm-hmm. right? And it's about the psychological standpoint that athletes have to go through in order to change, because athletes just don't separate from the sport and then you just go into everyday life. Mm-hmm. It's not that simple, man. It's almost like an inmate getting out of jail. Mm-hmm. Like you've heard about a new life, you dreamed about this new life while you was in the athletes dream about this new life, right? But it's just like my mind hasn't made it there yet. Mm-hmm. My body is here in this new job. My body is here with my family. My body is here with seeking out who God is, but my mind is still on the field, mm-hmm. right? So it's like what happens from a psychological standpoint, and that's my idea, mm-hmm. right? That's my idea that I'm taking to the TED Talk stage. So in preparation for that, I want this podcast to serve as a case study, mm-hmm. right? So getting your story, trying to see, okay, if a cat goes through life, it probably ain't sports, but it goes down the trajectory that yours is going down. It's like what's possible for me on the thing that my mind is not there yet, but my body is trying to make strides to seeing what my life would be like in this new arena. Like, who are you, bro? Like, what's your story, bro?
So I'm Jacoby Williams, the founder of Everybody Wins. Everybody Wins is it got a lot of foes. Working to enhance neighborhood success in the West, the East, the North, and the South, through wealth, through educational, nutrition, and spiritual. Mm. Also have a organization that I'm working through, I mean, an initiative throughout the city of Birmingham to reduce gun violence called One Hood. So it's a One Hood that they bought from New Jersey, mm. and they just took the wins off my organization, and now it's called One Hood Wins. So, gotcha. Like I said, that wins can go everywhere because, you mm-hmm. know, every place you got a West, you got a North, you got a East, you got a South.
Well, hold on. So it's not W-I-N-S.
No, it's W-E-N-S.
Got you. So it's West, East, North, and then South.
Right. Man, because you look at it, bro, if you take the W off wins, then that's not the whole Birmingham. Mm. So I created it because we got to stop working in silos. We got to stop working in these cliques. We got to come together. Mm-hmm. When we come together, and when we stronger, we come together when we better. Yeah. So working to enhance neighborhood success, when we come together, everybody wins. Mm. So that's how I created in 2020, you know, during COVID. Trying to just, you know, like you said, sports, you know, I played basketball, I played football. I went to college for basketball. Mm. I wish I would have kept playing football, but I went to college for basketball.
So hold on, let's start there, man, because I know, like, I played a lot of sports growing up, but, mm-hmm. you know, my trajectory went towards football, mm-hmm. right? I'm curious to see, like, what made you or what inspired you to make that decision to just pursue basketball?
Because I come from a football family. I had an older brother, four-star, five-star, played at Southern Miss. Had another brother, you know, committed to Auburn in 10th grade. My baby brother had 15 Division I scholarship. I made that because I couldn't grow. Mm. Like, I was so little, and I played quarterback.
Yeah.
Then I ended up getting a concussion at an early age.
Dang, bro.
So I couldn't grow. I got a concussion, and I ain't started playing basketball literally to my 7th grade year, 8th grade mm-hmm. year. But from 5 years old, from little league all up until middle school, I played football.
Gotcha.
Played quarterback. Like, we come from a football family. Like, my cousin, football. Like, we come mm-hmm. from a football family. And, like, I was the first one to play basketball, to make that transition to play basketball.
Yeah.
But all my brothers played basketball. We were just athletes. Mm-hmm. And couldn't grow, and then I had a concussion in, I want to say, my 135 year in mm-hmm. Little League football.
Yeah, so that's yeah. that's probably like the eighth grade.
Yeah, so, yeah. yeah.
So you transitioned to playing basketball. Was everybody in your circle, like your family, were they supportive of that?
No.
Since everybody was doing it? So what was that like?
At the time, like I said, I was a good quarterback. Mm-hmm. Like, they was like, nah, because you got to stand. We come from the culture we come from, the hood we come from. At one point in time, they thought basketball was soft sport.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Let's keep it real.
They still have some of those. Right. You know.
They thought basketball was for soft people. And like growing up in the brickyard, at the time, yeah. you like everybody played football.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, like it was a pushback for a minute. But like I said, I was good at it. Mm-hmm. So once they seen I was good at it, I got the support I needed. But at first, man, that's for. Soft people, man. You know, I can't use the word I want to use, but they ain't like that. Because, like I say, everybody in my family played football. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody played football. And everybody was good at it. Mm-hmm. So, when I switched over to basketball, they were like, bro, you soft. Like, what's going on? So,
dang. So, you say you played in college?
Yep.
Okay. So, how long did you play in college?
So, I went to 2 years. I did 2 years at Mendocino Junior College in California.
Okay.
I finished and got a scholarship to the University of Maine in Fort Kent.
Okay.
But that's when life threw a detour. Mm. I got there. I was one of the biggest recruits, you know, since. It was a long time. But that's when I think, you know, God had other plans. That's when I lost the love for the game.
Yeah.
Went up there on a full scholarship, got up there. My credits from California didn't transfer over.
Dang, bro.
So I went from a transfer junior to back to a freshman. Mm. Got the basketball scholarship, but didn't get the academic scholarship. So I had to pay out my pocket for school. At the time, my mama was sick. I had a brother who was getting in trouble in the streets. Mm. So it's a lot of things that went into me making that decision. Then I had just lost the love for the love, bro. Because you would get caught up in, and I know you can test to this, you know, you play sports, you know, you sign the autographs and you hugging kids and, you know, it feel like you got to do it. Mm-hmm. And some days you don't want to do it. Yeah. Some days you ain't much yourself. And it's like, you know, now I wish NIL was back in, we was in school. Mm-hmm. Like, they making the money off you and you like, and you don't know if you're going to eat tomorrow. So it's just like, I seen then I had my brother, you know, end up going to college, and he knew the routes to it, and he helped me a lot. And I was looking like, he always told me, you better use them because they're going to use you. Mm-hmm. But I was never in a position to use them.
Yeah.
So I was getting used. And I think that was my love, you know, I lost the love for it, you know, and came back home, and we'll get to it. But, that was life threw a detour for me.
Bruh, I thank you for being just open and vulnerable with that, because That's the real tight situations, man, mm-hmm. that'll happen is, you know, once you lose the love of something, bro, your feet ain't going to keep going in that same direction, mm-hmm. right? It's going to be other things that try to get your attention. And that's one thing that I was faced with at Murray State is that, okay, once the game is gone, I got a decision to go home. I got a decision to try to make life work, because I was like, man, I know what's waiting up on me at the mm-hmm. crib, bro. Like, man, when I tell you, bro, it was a scary place for me to be, to go back to Birmingham, bro. And be like, man, what is this? What is this going to be like? Like, I'm like, bro, I'd rather suffer up here and don't know where my next meal going to come from. Because at least, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So with you say you ended up coming home, bro. Like, walk us through, like, you know, the younger Jacoby. Just got done playing basketball. People still remember you as that from what you left. Mm-hmm. But you're coming back with the mindset. Like, what was your mindset like?
So, to piggyback on what you just said, like, so my junior college – was better than my university. But you know, we get to
the... So JUCO was better, bro?
It was better because that's when I started making the money. So my first year in JUCO, I got promised all this stuff and it didn't pan out. But I had that mindset that you had. I'm not going back to Birmingham.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, my first year in junior college, bro, I slept on the sofa.
Wow.
My mom ain't know. Nobody didn't know. Mm-hmm. I slept on the sofa. Because I was determined not to come back to Birmingham.
Yeah.
And we're talking about I was 18, going on 19 when I left and going to college. That was my first time flying. And I'm in California in a part that nobody will never, you know, I'm in Ukiah, California.
Yeah.
I'm in the mountains, you know. Yeah. 19 years old, it's my first time ever leaving home. Bro, I was just trying to figure it out. But I was determined not to come back home. But like I said, I felt like at the time, and I said this on my pastor podcast, like, it's like all the situations I was going through, I looked like someone was blessing from God. Because in the time when I was in California, like I said, my first year, I was in the capital of marijuana.
Yeah.
So I was in Mendocino County. If anybody know that, familiar with that, that's the capital of marijuana in the entire world. So it's just like you got 2,500 people working this building. 2,500 people got weed.
Yeah.
So for me, from being out of state, they looked at it as, that's a gold mine. And like I said, man, the guy, you know, kept approaching me. Man, they called me Bama. I had a white Mustang drop top, Bama plates. And when I said I lived better in junior college than my university because I was making money.
Yeah.
Like, bro, I was telling people, bro, and some people wouldn't believe it. And if they seen in the movie, bro, I was literally playing basketball and selling marijuana at the same time.
Damn, boy.
Like literally.
How would, not the logistics, you know what I'm saying? Cause he got a young audience, bro. You know, they'll try to relive. But, like, how were you able to do that mentally, bro? Because you get in certain situations like, bro, you know, if I got to play this game, I'm away from where I stash the junk at, you know what I'm saying? So, it's like, how did you manage that mentally? How was that?
And when I tell this story, some people take it the wrong way, but it's just having a father present. So when I first got the plug, my dad was fresh out of prison. And this was the first time that I'm really having a conversation with my daddy. You know, my daddy did like 3 bids, you know, spread it out, I want to say almost 20 years. So I was 19, so have in prison. And deal was just picking him back and off my daddy. But what he told me, what he did that day, I ain't realized until I went on my journey. So that 19-year-old, he told me why he did it when I was 35.
Wow.
And when I called him and I told him what was going on, and like I said, he was fresh out of prison. My daddy had 3 Class A felons. So if anybody knows 3 Class A felons, he supposed to never see the streets again.
Dang.
And he was trafficking cocaine.
Yeah.
So he supposed to never see the streets again. He got out from doing, I want to say, like I said, he did 3 different bids. So I want to say like 15 to like 19 years straight. I mean, not straight, but time. Like get out 5 years, go back 5 years, get out 5 years. So like when he got out, I called him, and this when I say our relationship came from the game. When I tell people, like, they ask my relationship with my dad. Now, to this day, we got a great relationship because what we built through the game. You see what I'm saying? So I called him, and, like, I got the plug. And
now, is this the game of basketball? Or
no, this the okay. Marijuana guy.
Yeah.
He was like, I said, I got the plug. And I asked him, do he still get down? Him, like I said, bro, he went out of prison a whole year.
Yeah.
And he was like, ain't school bus yellow? I remember the conversation like yesterday. And make a long story short, when I stopped, because my daddy, you know, I'm giving my daddy, but my mindset came because I had my dad.
Yeah.
Even because it was bad, but I had my daddy.
Wow.
I had my daddy to fall back on because he come from this. And to make a long story short, when I stopped and I asked him because I seen our relationship, because I said our relationship came from the game. Before that, we had a relationship. He was in prison. We had no relationship. He left my mama when I was a baby, when we was little. So we had a relationship. So our relationship came from the game.
Yeah.
And I asked him because when I stopped and I'm supplying everybody, what that mean for them? They stopped. And I called him, like, man, you know, since we ain't, what's up, man? Because, you know, I'm his oldest son. We look alike, we act alike, everything, you know. I'm hearing people saying you like this, and I kept hearing that, and I went down the road that he was going on, and he told me something when I went on my journey that he knew this day was going to come. Because I kept hearing your daddy this, that was your daddy that, but now me and my dad ain't that. My daddy wasn't that. So I get to hear his side of the story.
Yeah.
And finally his side of the story. And he was like, you know, when you came and asked me, do I still get down, I would rather risk my freedom so you wouldn't go to prison. Because I've been to prison. I know prison wasn't for you.
Wow, bro.
So my dad used to come get my whole... When I first started, I was sending all of my dad. My dad was sending it for me, sending money back.
Yeah.
Even when I got out of it, when I left school and came back in Birmingham, like majority of my money was through my dad, because he was in the country.
Yeah.
So he was like, I did that so you wouldn't have to go through what I went through, because I know prison wasn't for you.
Yeah.
So I was gonna risk my freedom to go back to prison for, because if I got caught, I'll go back to prison for the rest of my life. So you wouldn't go to prison. And that day when he said that, and, you know, just going to ask him, like, why you ain't never say nothing, this and that, he was like, I wasn't going to make nobody look bad to make me look good. Mm-hmm. So I took everything because I knew the day was going to come, that me was going to have this conversation. And, bro, when I say he told me that, bro, I'm talking about it's just something like, and that's what's the point of having a father in your life, if it's a father present or a father not present, but or doing something good or something bad.
Mm-hmm.
But by him being there and showing me all money, good money, son. Slow money better than no money, son.
Yeah.
So he instilled that in me. And when I was in the streets, like I said, bro, a lot of people ain't know I got down until I came out and telling my story. Because I ain't carrying myself like that. Why? Because I had my daddy to tell me, this how you stay out here long, son.
Yeah.
This you make this mistake, you do this, this is going to cost you. And like, bro, I ain't proud of, but like I said, bro, from 18 to 35, 34, we talking almost 2 decades.
Wow, bro.
But because I had my daddy there guiding me. So that's the mindset I had. It wasn't off my mind. Because, bro, I tell you, before I went to California, bro, I come from it. But I never touched drugs or nothing in my life. I ain't had my first drink until I was 21 years old. Like, you seen the basketball. So when my name started ringing, like, some of the people ain't gonna believe it because they ain't see that Jacoby.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, it had to be hands-on to say, oh, he did that. Like, some of my folks was in denial. Coaches was in denial because the face card and who I was.
Yeah.
So it was in denial. But the mindset behind everything, because I had my daddy right there to guide me the whole way, bro. Like, and a lot of people don't know that. Like, my dad used to, and when I say my dad was really taking chances, my dad was driving 4 hours here, 4 hours back.
Wow, bro.
And he'll come pick up my whole wealth I got, pick it up, sell it for me, bring the money back, we do it over. And we did that for almost 2 decades, bro. Yeah. I started with my dad.
Wow, bro.
I said, there's a lot of grace in being put inside the lines then, bro. Now, like my trainer used to tell us this all the time, bro. He says, grace being put in the lines then. But if you walk in there under your own will, bro, the lines going to eat your tail. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you were put inside of a situation that God graced you to be able to walk away out of it, and the presence of your father was able to guide you through that, and you learned some valuable lessons that I still think to this day you still use, but in a way that is beneficial to just mankind, bro. And to segue into that, like, you know, you mentioned one hood wins, right? We talk about West, East, North, and South. Some of those skill sets that you learn from being inside the game of basketball, but also being in the game of the streets, right? What are some of those things that you still use to this day, but it's beneficial to the people around you?
That's a good question. One, just me as a person, bro, to deal with people and even much playing sports and the game, bro, you gotta have some type of people skills. You gotta have some type of heart.
You gotta have some type of heart, bro.
Yeah, you gotta have heart.
But I'm saying like heart, like the, you know, that dog in you to push past someone, like a heart as far as compassion.
Like both.
Wow.
Both. Because it's in the streets. Like getting in the streets, and my whole reason with getting in the streets, tell you fast me, we whine, like I got in fully to take care of my folks. When I was in school, bro, my mama, my brothers in sudden miss. My mama was working. It's seven of us. So we looking at my brother to be the breadwinner.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, he was a five-star. He made it to the NFL, but it went from tearing his hamstring. Mm-hmm. He probably still been in the NFL. So we was putting all our energy towards him.
Yeah.
I'm in junior college, so I'm struggling. Mm-hmm. But my brother, they were making sure my brother good. So then, like I said, my brother, my little brother was getting older. People around me getting older. Bro, I've been helping, taking care of my brothers and sister and helping my mom around the house since I was 13.
Wow, bro.
And it wasn't just from shooting dice in the neighborhood, watching out for the police, for the OGs on the block. Like, bro, my mama tell you she had to come get me off the block because I'm all around old head.
Mm-hmm.
So I always, people thought I was older than what I am because
yeah.
I always just sit around the old head. Like, I always learn. Like, people to ask me now, they be like, man, what you do? I'm always a student before anything.
Man, bro, your story is beautiful, man, because I remember when I was just a jit, bro. Like, I remember Sunday school teacher told me this story about Jesus, bro.
Mm-hmm.
They said, bro, you used to go to the synagogue, mm-hmm. like a temple,
mm-hmm.
and just sit up under the older folk,
mm-hmm.
just listening. And then it came a point where he started teaching.
Teaching, right.
Right? So, like, I even hear that inside of your story that, like, you got up under people, right? So you had to submit your own knowledge, your own wisdom that you thought you had to be in that position, right? So do you see just young kids that you're dealing with now getting that same positioning?
Yeah, most definitely, man. And I feel like they're getting it better than what I got it from because I was doing it on the wrong influence.
Yeah.
Like, I tell people all the time, like, especially my son, bro, if I had somebody like myself or you, for example, when I was 15,
mm-hmm.
I'd be so far ahead. Because we was taught, I realized, bro, on this journey that what if, and not it's not what if, but it's just, you know, just speaking in general. If everything we learned was wrong, everything they taught us was wrong. And they say stuff just happened, right? And when I went on my journey and I found out, like, stuff just don't happen. Mm-hmm. Everything happened for a reason,
yeah.
right? And there's two ways you learn. You learn anything in life, and it's just to me. Personal experience or having a mentor. Having a mentor is like having a cheat sheet. Mm-hmm. It's like having a test to the answer to the test.
Yeah.
So, and bro, I just realized and came to if I would listen to some of them people that back then, mm-hmm. now, that, like I said, it was guys that we didn't look at because society said it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Them the guy I was up on. Imagine how I got up on Mr. C. But I ain't just look at Mr. C as, man, he's just a science teacher. Mr. C don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I'm Big Homie in the hood, got the jewelry on. I want to be like Big Homie because mm-hmm. this is where I come from.
Right.
So the guys that I was up on, it was more of a, they just taught me to, and it's the difference. They was getting money taking care of their family.
Mm-hmm.
Now guys, they're getting bad influence. It's not getting money. It's not taking care of their family. It's shoot, shoot, bang, bang.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So with guys up on me now, I'm teaching them, like, this is what it is, this is what it ain't. This is the foundation. And I tell them all the time, I go, everything that I teach or I say come in my mouth going to be personal experience or biblical teaching.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And one of my favorite stories in the Bible, I tell them all the time, like the two men who built their house.
Mm.
In that story, people think he's talking about a house. He's talking about a life.
Wow.
You see what I'm saying? And you go back to it, you don't know, you knew which man was foolish to the storm came. Because mm. both of them stayed in the same neighborhood. Both of them went to the same church. But you didn't know which one was foolish until the storm came.
Yeah.
So I tell guys now, bro, you got to take advantage. And it's not me to my own horn, but if I had a me or a you mm-hmm. when I was 15 or 16, bro, I'd be yeah. way ahead, bro. Because the guys I was getting at 15 and 16 was get this pack.
Yeah.
Take care of your mama. Get these females.
Yeah.
Because that's what society told us. Not this, because I got introduced to Jesus at 9. But if I would have stayed up on the, that person who introduced me, bro, I would be so far ahead. But I thank God for everything I went through because this is who I am today. But I'm just imagining if I would have paid attention to that.
Yeah.
Because he had a jury around. He had the nice car, but he had a 700 feet of credit score.
Yeah.
He got a nice house. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's, you know, society pushed us away from, and because this is what we was taught. This is what we seen. So I tell guys all the time, man, you got to take advantage because there's only two ways you're going to learn something. Mm-hmm. And we even bumped our heads so they won't have to bump their head.
Right. And I think it's not a point where you'll be so far ahead because you had to go through the moments where you had to bump your head.
True.
You feel me? Because if you didn't bump your head and everything was peaches and cream, bro, and you got everything God, like you ever prayed to God for, bro, you wouldn't be able to keep it, dog.
That's true.
Like, you'll probably be up fighting yourself. True. Like, dang, bro, like, but how I deal with this?
Like,
I don't trust him no more.
Right.
Like, how I deal with somebody that don't trust me?
Right.
I got that from the streets.
Yeah.
How I deal with a coach that I don't like, but I know I got to submit under their leadership. Learn that doing basketball. It's like, bro, if I want to play, I don't care how he said it or what he said it, bro.
Yeah.
I got to execute.
Yeah.
You feel me? So I feel like, you know, I can get in those moments too. Cause I was just on the podcast last week. You know what I'm saying? Whenever I reflect on my story, that lets me know that I have a little bit more healing to do because of the posture that I told it out of. It's like, dang, why did I say I could have been further along? Like, what in my life did I regret? Like, am I living with some regrets?
Right.
And that made me go deeper, right? So with the people that's under you, man, with your well, did you want to say something?
No, I get what you're saying. No, okay. But when I say so far ahead, it's more like a mental thing. You see what I'm saying?
Hold on. Come on now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're talking about psych a lot. Like, psychology, right, behind the decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
So go a little bit in detail about that. Like, you say your mindset. What
because, like, bro, when I was out there in the streets, bro, it's like I thought I was smart. You know what I'm saying? I was smart to a certain extent
because
I didn't get caught. But, like I said, that was just the grace of God. My father being present.
Mm-hmm.
But now, bro, like, it's like sometimes I have to tell myself, get out of my head.
Because
I'm more of a, and it do with growth too. And, you know, having that community and having other guys in your life who went before you. That's why I said having a mentor is like having a cheat sheet.
Yeah.
So mentally, you think you smart when you out there, but it's some of the stuff, like, if I know what I knew now with the money I had back then, you see what I'm saying? Because the stuff I learned now that I didn't learn with the money.
Yeah.
So it's like certain stuff like that. But I don't regret nothing in my past, bro. I feel like everything I went through in my past is for, I had to go through it to be on, to sit on your platform and do other stuff I do.
Yeah.
If I ain't go through that, if some of the stuff that I would have missed, I wouldn't be able to do this. So I had to go through everything I went through, and I'm glad I went through everything I went through. You see what I'm saying? So I'm grateful about everything I went through.
Yeah, good, bro. So, like, with your One Hood Wins initiative, man, I've been to a couple of the outings. I was on my way, bro. Like, I'm coming from out of town. Like, man, I'm finna go. Then I know we had to cancel it because of the weather, I believe. But with that initiative, we have a lot of credible people that come to the communities. How do these mentors change the dynamic in real time?
So, shout out to Dr. Davis. With the pull up for peace and the One Hood, I was already doing it. But it wasn't polished.
Yeah.
So having the mentors now make it more polished and help me, you know, track the data and record everything because if it's got to be televised. Revolution got to be televised. Because I was just doing it. You know, like nothing I'm doing now is not something I was doing when I was in the streets. Let's go back there. 13 years, bro, when I was in the streets, bro, I did back-to-school giveaways. I did Thanksgiving, Christmas, just random paying people bills in the neighborhood, taking care, buying everybody joints and, like, I was already doing it, but it was on a different scale. So with my mentors now, it making everything look more polished with the One Hood. That's what it's just making everything look more polished now.
Right.
And, you know, bringing the resources to the people. Because it's one of my biggest things when they ask me, I don't want to get caught up in, because it's like, bro, and it's crazy, bro. Like, sometimes I think you probably feel like this too. Like, I didn't really know my influence until I started doing the work.
Yeah.
And you got people like, bro, if you don't make it, bro.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know now. Hey, so yeah. that kept me going. Mm-hmm. That kept me getting up every day, you know, doing the stuff I'm doing. Because, like I said, you got so many people like, bro, if you don't make it, this ain't real. So having other mentors really making it just the polish of it, you know, they behind all the, you know, the people. I'm not the people, but the resources, the other initiatives that are coming along. All these people coming in town, and you know, they the more of the logistic part of it and all that. So yeah, I'm thankful for the special Dr. Davis, because like I said, she's the one. You know, she seen it. She heard about my story. She called me. And everything she told me on that phone back in January is coming to fruition. So,
yeah,
having a mentor. I tell people, man, the mentor is big, man.
Yeah,
I'm big.
That's good, bro. And that's powerful, man. You said something, influence. That's something that God been dealing with me on heavy, bro.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about the dream I had, bro?
Uh-uh, man.
Bro, that jump was crazy. It wasn't even the dream the way I was asleep. It was literally like a vision, bro. Like, we talking right now. Let's just say we just stopped talking for about 5 minutes, bro.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how you just go off into, like, space. Bro, I ain't even go to space, bro. I went to heaven. Like, literally, I was at the gates, bro. And God was telling me all the sins I made, bro. Like, everything. I'm like, dang. Okay, I repented on this. I didn't on this. And I'm like, dang, bro. I remember that, you know. Then he was like, all right, stand over to the side. Like, hold on, bro. You ain't gonna send me to heaven or hell. Like, you just to the side. He said, hold on. And this person came up, and I heard some things, but then I was locked into the things that God would hear. Be like, yeah, okay. So you went to this party. You slept with a dude, and you was under the influence and didn't know. And God look at me, shake his head. I'm like, and automatically, bro, I'd be like, dang, I reposted this flyer. I'm like, this girl would have never went to this party if she didn't go because I posted this flyer. And this person went up. Boom. So, okay, yeah, I ended up quitting the football team and everything like that, and went up, got on, strung out on drugs and all that time. I'm like, man, what this got to do with me? Boom. Saw him, he ain't finished through the line one time. But at my influence as a captain, I didn't hold him accountable. So it's just like, dang, out of my disobedience, I didn't stop the seed of quitting on themselves in that moment, and I didn't call it out, and then it was trickled down into this. God never said he penalized me for it, but he was able to see my influence and my lack of being obedience, right? Then a couple more people came, then a generation past them had came up. So I'm looking like, man, what in the world? Like, what is this? Bro, kids, you not, man. This kid was like, oh, yeah, man, like, I just thought I was just supposed to be homeless and just a crackhead or whatever. Now, my mama was depressed. Why I can't be depressed? My great-great-grandmother dealt with depression. Why I can't be depressed and be on drugs? Started looking all the way. I'm like, dang, this old girl that went to the party, this her great-great-great-great-grandson. I'm like, dang. So out of that transaction, bro, like, with God, he never put it on me like those things were my fault, but the influence of me making an impact in those key moments, bro, it was, and that changed my mindset behind influence, bro.
Facts.
Like, if you could think of a nightmare, bro, that was a nightmare for me, bro.
Because
it's like, okay, my eternal destination, whether I'm going to heaven or hell, is not predicated on that, but it's just the weight of what influence is.
Right.
It's like, bro, and on the other side of it, things can be positive. So it was like, hey, you directed that, and then they great-great-great-grandkids dealing off things you were impactful on in today's.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? So the next question I wanted to ask you, bro, is at Flip the Culture, we dig into how individual transformation can rewrite just like the collective culture, right? Birmingham is a culture and has a rich culture, so I don't want to talk about the culture of Birmingham like it's something new. Because it discredits all the things our forefathers did inside the city,
right?
And even the things that people are doing today, because there's some good things going on. But how do you see one hood wins helping Birmingham evolve from an emotional standpoint?
What One Hood is, to you know, the audience, so they can understand what it is. So all we doing is policing our own neighborhood. So you got guys from the west, the east, the north, the south, didn't grow up together. All probably was already doing the work on their own. So how One Hood got established in New Jersey, New Jersey, they had a big shooting. So if you know, they had over, at one point in time, they had over 100-some homicides too. Wow. And the deputy, she's the deputy now, at Keisha Erie, she had called emergency me. And she said when she called it, it was a big guy who got killed. And this one killer can lead to a bloodshed, and they see it.
Wow, bro.
So she called emergency me, and everybody was at the table. She looked around in the room, and she seen everybody at the table. But who? So she ended up calling another me with the Crips, the Bloods, the Lad King, all that. She called emergency me, and that's how they formed One Hood. So it's just, you know, guys who used to be a part of the problem, now they're part of the solution. So coach people to the problem, coach people to the solution. So she brought them to the table. She brought them with the table with the chief of police. She brought them to the table with the mayor. She brought them to the table with the city councilman, with the preachers, the everybody who make the decisions. Everybody was at the table but them. So that's how you form One Hood. And what One Hood do is we de-escalate situations. Because shout out to one of my brothers up there, he said something so vibe, because we talked about the people who did work before us. And he said, you know, go back to Malcolm X. We ain't going to be able to stop everything. Like, if we really think about it, it's never going to be peaceful, right? But live, let live. We push that motto. We live, let live. And when they took that, I understood what it was. Because we the people with the influence. We know what's going on in our neighborhood. And some of that time, it just be a conversation. So we probably can't stop the first shoe, but we can get in front of the second shoe or the third shoe. So what One Hood do, know what we do. We de-escalate situations. We bring resources to them. And we really try to just, you know, de-escalate. We take CPR classes. We take Narcan classes. We get trained. So that's how it is. We policing our own neighborhood because we are criminal messengers. You see what I'm saying? And since One Hood been in Birmingham, around this time last year, we had almost 100 homicides. We had 150, 65 last year. It dropped 52%.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I'm not taking all the credit to One Hood, but we really boots on the ground doing the work. Like I was just telling you before we get up here, bro, we get calls constantly about we stopping beef in the streets. We stopping retaliation. We stopping kids from, you know, going down that path. So, and you got other, you know, small grassroots organizations who doing the work too. But we are boots on the ground, and people are seeing who One Hood is. And like I said, we've been doing the work. So go back to it. I really believe, and it's just from the kids that I've been influencing and dealing with. Like right now I got like 6 kids that I mentor. And I'm talking about these kids, these high-risk kids. I'm talking about assaults and all type of stuff. But I've been dealing with it for like 4 to 5 months. When I say all these kids, I have seen a 180. Just about One Hood being present, somebody being present. So I think One Hood, if getting the resources and the proper, more training and, you know, the things that we need to, you know, continue to do the work on a bigger scale, bro, I see a huge difference. Because I feel like a lot of these kids, you know, are being raised by their mamas, so their emotions are, you know, I ain't trying to say all female, but they're raised by their mamas. So I tell people all the time, bro, they emotionally incarcerated.
Wow.
Like, and you got some men, but most of these kids, bro, I just did a research, bro, and that's the gap I think, you know, I want to say Birmingham is one of the biggest, if not number one, number two, when it comes to single moms in the whole United States.
I did not know that, bro.
So we dealing with a lot of boys are dealing with, they don't know how to control their emotion. They don't know how to control. And I tell you all the time, if you control your mind, if you master your mind, you can master your life. Because that's all I did. Ain't nothing changed. Only thing that changed, bro, was my mind and my heart. I still dressed the way I dressed, talked the way I talk. Yeah. Only thing changed was my mind and my heart.
Let's talk about that, man. That transition, bro, because I feel like we sped through it a little bit. I know we hinted at it because you went from playing ball, got involved with your dad, right? Mm-hmm. He coached you through a lot of things, and you felt safe inside that situation. And then you came back to Birmingham, right? Got involved with One Hood Wins, but I feel like there's a little bit of a gray area, right? So it's like, you know, from your mind being transformed and your heart also being just led by Jesus Christ, you know what I'm saying? What caused you to flip the way you wanted to live your life?
One, I could say, being empty after success. Outside
of, we're making bread though, bro. How you empty?
Bro, I ain't have no spiritual life. I lacked discernment. It's like I was pointing to everybody, but I was pouring from empty cup. Nobody wasn't pointing to me. Right? And I ain't have community. I ain't have people like you or Danny, like the people I got now.
Yeah.
I was doing all the porn. I ain't had nobody pointing to me. I went in my word because I come from it. Like I said, I don't come from no spiritual family, but, you know, growing up in the projects, you might meet that one person that see something in you. I had, shout out to brother, sister, G-Jarnet, and brother D-Jarnet, that these was my, like, godparents. And they got me, and I met him through my auntie, but they were picking me up every day, taking me to church. He was teaching me how to cut the grass. I was cutting the grass at the church. I was urshman at this age. So when we moved from Inslee, I lost that. So, you know, like I said, empty out the success, bro, you know, having the money I was making, bro, and was still was not fulfilled. You know, I was trying to find it in females. I'm talking about I was buying different cars, jewelry, clothes, like the stuff that society say we need to make us. I had that, and I was still trying to. I was still missing something.
Yeah.
I was still trying to find myself because all I heard was society tell me who I was. I ain't know who I was. Mm-hmm. I was going out with society say I was a player, person by the bottles, this that, and I had that mentality because I ain't know who I was. You know, some people hide behind their money, bro. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you really don't know who a person is until you see them on their, you know. So I really didn't find out who I was, bro. Because, like I said, you seen me and I looked good. But I was going home, bro. I'm talking about fighting demons. Bro, it was bad. And the second, I had a bad car accident that I walked away from, and I knew him by God. I'm talking about the car flipped. I'm talking about it wasn't no, I ain't hit nobody. Nobody ain't hit me. At first, I thought somebody hit me until, you know, God came to me and was like, nah. Because it was on the road, regular routine, going home. Car full of marijuana. And the bro, car flipped like five times, bro. Walked away from that scratch. I mean, that wreck with no scratches, no bruises, no internal bleeding, nothing. And that was like one of my really, if you know, we all had that moment. Now, God, be real. Reveal yourself to me. And, you know, that was that moment for me, bro. That was really for me, bro. So
now, you ain't pray for him to reveal yourself to you, did you?
I won't say I would pray, but it's like he came to me because after the wreck, bro, I was shocked. Like, because if you see my car, and you seen me after, you was like, because when the police got on the scene and my girl got on the scene, Like, my girl thought I was dead when she seen the cop.
Wow, bro.
Like, and so it happened. Only person on the road, a man helped me get out the car. He had to bust the windshield to get me out the car. And when the police came, they did the little, make sure I wasn't drunk or nothing and this and that. And they was talking to me. And the police didn't believe I was in, that was me in the car. Because, like I said, you know, most people in the car ready, you know, blood and
yeah.
Bro, I ain't had nothing on me, bro. We stand on the side of the road. We stayed out there almost a whole hour, bro. And they couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe it. So those two things right there that really made me, you know, like, some got to, it got to be something better than this. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, bro, I don't think that some people, like, you really had to know me to know what type of money I was making.
Yeah.
And people around me was going to prison. Like, one of my best friends went to prison. And he was a good dude, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about he had just got engaged. Bro, was I'm talking about coaching football, basketball, baseball. Bro, had just got him a new house. Good dude. He was hustling, too, but he was a good dude.
Yeah.
And, bro, people close to me was dying. And I had to just realize, like, bro, something got to be better than this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I knew, like, I couldn't continue to doing this. And God revealed that, like, yeah, you're right, you couldn't continue to do this. And we go back to influence, bro. When I came out, bro, like, I re-got baptized. And after I got re-baptized, bro, my mama had got baptized for the first time. Mm.
Wow.
My niece got baptized. My influence, best friend got bro. Baptized.
Influence.
People around me just getting baptized. And yeah. People was coming. I don't know. People seen my pastor podcast when we were talking about how he was out for 5 weeks straight. Mm. And people was like, if you say Jacob, I know God real because they know yeah. where I come from.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just like, bro, I didn't know my influence that big because what society had made me
mm-hmm.
believe. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And once I found myself, bro, I'm like, nah, I'm made in the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
That would, you know, so
yeah.
Coming, them two things right there really made me turn around.
That's good, bro. And I'm glad that your heart posture was in the right place to receive what God was trying to give to you, bro. Because I see partners, bro, that's probably the most troubling thing that I deal with personally, bro. And I got mentors and I have people around me that says I don't supposed to be carrying this guilt like this.
Mm.
But I'm just like, bro, when I see folks, then I'm like, bro, I know for a fact they ran a faster 40 than me, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I know they crap blocked me on the field, bro. I know they were stronger than me. I know they could speak better than me, bro. I know their ideas are better than mine. But it's just I've been blessed to be in this position to capitalize on something that frustrated me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it frustrated you to see your partners get caught up like that and mm-hmm. they good people. You know what I'm saying? They just trying to make a means to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the line of work that I do now, bro, with, you know, the financial literacy space and stuff, man, I see a lot of people that commit crimes, people that cause bodily harm, psychological mind to, I mean, harm to other people is because of the lack of resources.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? In your initiative and the team that you have at One Hood Wins, bro, it's refreshing for me to come from a city like this and know that the community trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know you see programs come in and have all these promises, bro, and they break them. And you mm-hmm. can't fault the community people for looking at people like, hold on, bro, why you dressed like that coming right. in here? Like, we don't,
right.
why you talking like that, bro?
Right.
Like, you talk like, you know mm-hmm. like people that we don't trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see that you were doing things before, with Pastor Davis. Dr.
Davis.
Dr. Davis, yeah. right? Before Dr. Davis got involved, you were still doing it, though.
Mm-hmm.
But in those moments where it's like, well, it's not as polished or right. it's not as this, that's the thing that probably got the most
right.
the most engagement, right.
Right? right?
It's like, bro, we just out here.
And that's crazy you said that, bro.
yeah.
Like, my first event, bro, I had, and it was fresh on my journey, bro. Like, bro, I don't know. I know how and why, but God, because yeah. I ain't had the money. I yeah. just had the vision, and there was stuff I already doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, if you think about, go back to how man was made.
Mm.
God spoke to man. He ain't speak Damn. Around man. he yeah. ain't speak, you know, he ain't speak down on man.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke life into man.
Yeah.
He told man what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like sometimes we miss it because we want to hear something. Like, God speak to us through people, through TV, through all type of stuff. And he really spoke through my wife now. She was my fiance at the time. He spoke through her. And like I said, playing sports, bro, I feel like I tell people all the time, I think we talked about this before, bro. As athlete, bro, from part one all up until college, bro, all we got to do is score the touchdown. We don't got to draw the play up. We ain't got to do no audible. We ain't got to tell who to block who. We ain't got to tell who to run this route. If you do what you're supposed to do, you're going to score this touchdown or you're going to score this bucket, right? So I think what most athletes mess up at, we don't know how to draw the play. We don't know how to tell who get the ball. Now we got to pivot and we got to be the coach, the player. We got to do all that. So my wife spoke into me, but I think I know God spoke to her to tell me, baby, you a brand. You know who you is? You Jacoby. Like, she spoke this into me. Get up. Like, she used to leave me letters, bro. She getting them to go to work. Like, you don't know who you is? And that was God speaking to me to let me know, like, do what you've been doing. And, bro, I had my first event, bro. I had enough money to pay for the flyer. I put the flyer out there, bro. And when I put the flyer out there, this was for people who donate from what I did when I was in the streets, bro. I had already planted that seed.
Wow.
So, bro, I had over 200-300 kids, bro. And I still had stuff left over from donations. Man, bro, I had one guy, shout out to my guy, Drew. He used to be the valet man at the club that we used to run. Wow. And he said, bro, 12 years ago, bro, and he's the executive, he's the director of something at his organization called The Foundry that help people when they come out of prison and stuff. And he said, bro, I remember when I was, the only person who knew my situation was your brother, Reggie. And he said, bro, when I parked your car, bro, you treat me like I was a human, bro. You tilt me. You always spoke to me. You treated me like I was one of y'all. And bro donated me boxes of stuff.
Wow.
I had a girl, bro, wrote me on Facebook, told me to go to Sam's and pick up an order, bro. I had a cart of juices, hot dogs, tater tip. I used to see what you did at the park for kids. Like, I used to pay for my kids to play football. I had girls dropping out school supplies. Bro, I had people just dropping out stuff, calling me, hey, come pick this up. People giving me donations. I'm like, and all of it from, man, I remember you used to do this. Oh, I had a girl, first time she was at bowling alley, it was my son's birthday. I rented the bowling alley out. But she wanted her kid to bowl. And she was like, at the time, it was her daughter's birthday too. I paid for her and her whole family and let them bowl with us. Dropping off stuff. So it's like, I'm like, damn, my God. Like it's just all this stuff that I did that people came back and remembered. So when I put stuff out that I want to do back to school, I had ladies reaching out, I want to braid hair. I had dudes reaching out, I want to cut hair. And nobody ain't charged nothing. Everybody was doing it for free because the stuff they seen me do when I was in the streets.
Wow, man.
So, bro, and like I said, and it was big organization had they, it was back to school of this past year. Big organization had they the same day that I had my organization. And I had more people than any big organization in the middle of the project with no security, no police.
That's crazy, bro. And I think we talked about this before about just, we didn't call it influence, but now that I'm thinking about the conversation, like, it got to be influence, bro. Like, you could be fire doing stuff for the world, bro. You could be fire doing stuff for the kingdom, bro. People can always follow, bro. Like, that anointing ain't going nowhere, bro. Because God is just that good. You know what I'm saying? But one thing I know for a fact, bro, because talking my testimony, that's fruit. Your testimony is fruit. People are not going to put you to shame based upon your testimony, bro. That's in the word, bro. People can't put it to shame because that's what you hanging your hat on. People be like, oh, yeah, I wear my heart on my sleeve, bro. No, we don't, bro. As leaders, as shifters, bro, we can't wear our emotion on our sleeve. We wear our testimony on it. It's like, yeah, this is what I've been through. This is all the things. But even in that, bro, you still impacted them folks, bro. You still impacted the community, bro. You know what I'm saying? It just came with a cost. You know what I'm saying? Like, it came with a cost. So, bro, I appreciate you for being here, man. I just got one last question, brother. Just bring this thing all together. For someone whose life like yours has come full circle, what advice would you give others ready to flip their own culture?
For one, the first thing you gotta, it start with you. you gotta be the change that you want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, like we just talked about before we get started. Like, I hate to see people, and I ain't gonna say hate, dislike, oh, this ain't happening, this ain't happening.
Yep.
You know, it start with you. Mm-hmm. So, one, to acknowledge. That's the first thing you gotta do, acknowledge that you want to change. That's the first thing I did. I acknowledged, like, something gotta give. Like, it gotta be more than this.
Yeah.
And like I said, coming from, it looked good because I can go where I want to go. I was all over the world. I'm talking about going to the Super Bowl, going to All-Star, like doing everything that society say cool, but deep down inside, it was like I was just there. I don't know if I was coming or going. So first, you got to acknowledge that you want change, right? Two, you got to leave that perception open because you don't. If you're not in tune with the spirit and you don't leave a perception open, you'll miss it. And I'm going to tell you why. 2 weeks before my wreck, I'm in marriage counseling with my pastor at the time. And we in marriage counseling, we was talking and we were having this conversation. And he was like, I don't know why I'm going to tell you this. But he was like, man, before I got called to preach, I had 4 wrecks. He said I was running from my car. And he was like, you know, God told him that field wreck, he was going to kill him.
Wow.
So I had my wreck 2 weeks later. But my perception opened, not understanding, like, he told me that for a reason. Mm-hmm. I go back to the beginning, I said, what if everything, I probably, if I went in tune with the spirit and not looking at that, I would have missed it.
Yeah.
Because I would have felt like it just happened. Mm-hmm. Because in my past, bro, I felt like that. Stuff just happened.
A lot of people view it like that, bro.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, bro, and I know you can test for this, bro. When I sit down, when God set me down, first you got to acknowledge, you got to be in tune, and you got to be still, and you got to make sacrifice. So, when God set me down, bro, he really, like you said, how he sent you to, and, like, I was up, it wasn't no dream. Some of them was dreams, some of them was like, I got to sit in it and, you know, face it. I'm like, dang. That way he was trying to get my warning. Warning come before destruction. Bro, I had so many fender benders, bro. But I ignored it. Why? Because I had money. Why? Because people say stuff just happened. Because that's what we was taught. Stuff just happened. So when my wreck came, bro, all I can remember is listening to my pastors tell me about them 4 wrecks he had. And our favor might be different. So I knew I couldn't go through 4 wrecks. So I knew I had to change then. I knew I had to change. Because God sent me a warning through my pastor. I told you, God talked to everybody, bro. I knew then that I had to change. So for a person who watching this and you know, there might be that revelation you need to remember. You got to acknowledge that you won't change. Two, you got to be in tune. You got to be in tune with the spirit because we'll miss it. And like I said, being in tune, it's just like we can get in the car. And you know how big, powerful God is. People looking for him to be just loud. We both know he's got a gentle. He's gentle. But we be distracted by everything, bro. First thing we do, we get in the car. I don't do it no more, but we turn the music up. Throw Money Bad Yo on. Throw a little babe on. Go right. Go right. We go left. Why? Because we can't hear him. We distracted.
Yeah, songs say go left.
You go left. God tell you to go right, but you go left. Now you went left, and now you're in the car wreck. Or you went to jail. But your friends and the people around you, come on, stuff just happened. No, stuff don't happen. Stuff just don't happen. It's a lesson behind everything. So for that person, you got to understand, you got to acknowledge that you won't change. Two, you got to be in tune with the spirit. And once you acknowledge and you're in tune, you got to be still and you got to have sacrifice. Because, like I said, we be distracted by everything. Like, God constantly telling us now. You see what I'm saying? So, you got to be. I got an ebook that they can get, and I give it for free.
It's about, let people know my why.
It's just about my steps that I took. And it's called Little Step, Big Faith. Because it's on the small steps, but you got to have big faith. You know what I'm saying? Because people make God so complicated. And when I realized and I went on my journey, I'm looking like, man, because it's going to be more God. We're going to reach more people than these pastors reach, bro. I really come to realize that, bro, because I learned that from one of my pastors, man, and he really put it in my head, was like, He told me, I'd rather see you win than I win. Because if I win, they're going to say the pastor's supposed to win. But if you win, you get more people hope.
Bro, I don't know whether I was supposed to say that. I know I was led by God to say this, man, but it was out of emotions as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I was talking to this pastor, man. I was about to go up there and speak. It was for the youth day. He was talking about the youth. He's like, man, his perspective was so dry when it came to the youth. He said, maybe you can liven them up, man. You know, they don't want to do nothing. They only here because their parents make them be here. I'm like, bro, they ain't different than when you was younger, bro.
Right.
Like, bro, I folks was like, hey, I know mine for a fact.
Right.
He said, hey, you can go out here on Saturday night, be out there in the club with all your friends and stuff.
Going to church anymore.
You going
to
be up. And my parents, bro, we was the first ones there, last one to leave.
You going to church.
You know what I'm saying? So that discipline in my life showed me that, okay, I can do whatever I want to, but this has to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? This don't got to happen.
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe I need to miss this party because I know I got to get up for church in the morning. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you talking, man, it reminded me of this pastor who was complaining about all these different things, man. And I just asked him, I said, okay, your biggest thing is the youth not coming to church, right? And you saying, yeah, like, the things I have going on, they trust me and everything like that. So, okay. I said, if I get them to trust me, can I send them to you with the same trust that they have for me?
That was it.
Like, once they get inside of your walls, bro, your church, because right now you ain't extending the love of God outside the church.
Right.
But if we partner, right, and I bring these guys and these cats to your job, into your sanctuary, bro, will they be met with the love of God, or will they be met with ridicule and judgment and all these different things? He said, man, he said, yeah. He said, man, I have a heart for it, but I don't know if my congregation is ready to receive that.
Wow.
Bro, that hurt me, bro.
Wow. Because
I said, okay, if the pastor, if his posture is to receive, but the people not.
Wow.
And I left it there now.
Yeah.
Because then I was like, the people are a reflection of the people at the top.
Right. Right. Because then again, bro, that's our job. That's why I look at it. I look at both of us as evangelists, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what we go get the people.
Facts.
Bring them in. Are you gonna be able to keep them in? And not only just keep them. You know what I think? I know it's not about church or not calling people out, but you know what I think that we missing?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our churches and other churches too is discipleship, bro.
Wow, bro.
It's like people are coming to church, but are the leaders and not, and then they don't fall back on the pastor, they fall back on people in leadership.
Mm-hmm.
What are y'all doing to keep the people in church?
Yeah.
Are y'all doing community with them?
Mm-hmm.
Are y'all doing the Acts 2:42?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
When you said that, that's what it fall back on, bro. Like, mm-hmm. I think I'm ready, but I don't think my congregation. What?
And the congregation is the people in the community, bro. So it's
crazy.
And once you keep going down there, the congregation, people in the community, congregation, then the police officers, congregation, then the lawyers, congregation, then the judges. You feel me? These decision makers inside the city, it's like where people come for faith, where people come for healing.
Right.
Is it truly healing our city, bro?
Right.
My audience, when it comes to athletics and having being able to transition, I know it's going to be people that don't even have an association to the streets,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be able to take those key concepts, man, to be able to live their best lives, mm-hmm. man. So I appreciate you, man.
I appreciate you having me, man. Hey,
culture,
bro, I see this going. I see this big, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see this going. Bro, I see this like the Breakfast Clubs and the Drink Champs and all that for real, bro, because, like, what you doing, bro, is – It's much needed, and it's much needed in our community, especially when it comes to athletes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because we see the percentage of the what it's like, 1%.
Yeah.
And helping them understand to know how to pivot. And I don't think most of it out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I said, you go back to, bro, we've been giving everything to us when we were 45 years old, bro.
Yeah.
Now you telling me to do something different?
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people all the time, if you show me different, I can do different.
Yeah.
And what you doing is showing them different, bro. So just keep going, bro. I think I see this. I know this is gonna get bigger and bigger, bro. So I see the sky's the limit.
Sky's the limit with it, bro. I receive that,
yes,
man.
Sir. Yes, sir.
I receive that. Well, y'all, that's it, man. Flip the culture. What was I supposed to say, bro?
Hey, you know what to say.
Flip the culture. Well, the people don't change until you do, man.
Yes, sir.
You're gonna
yes,
get
sir.
Right, man. That wasn't what it's supposed to, that wasn't it, bro. Flip the culture where the culture don't change until we do. That was it. I gotta get right, bro. Dang, bro.
It's all good.
Man, hey, we gone, man.